So you'd be very disappointed if I wasn't going to talk about exascale, and I am going to talk about exascale. I think, and I am going to make a plea for certain things, which I hope David in his previous roles will understand. But I also want to say some more general things as well about supercomputing and where we are. I thought I'd start off. I brought a GPU with me because many people don't really touch these things. So I'll start it off here and you pass it around. That's the sort of GPU that's inside Frontier, the world's first exascale computer. And that would cost you something around $80,000. Obviously, that's a broken one.
Such a high trust in product.
Yeah. So I think we're at an interesting point in the UK at the moment. We have a surfeit of plans. Lord Valance actually initiated that one. It's a very good report. It led to the Future Computer Review, linked to the Science and Technology Framework, which actually weirdly was sneaked out the same day of the Future Computer Review. I think it didn't get the standing that it really should have. We've had the AI Opportunities Action Plan, which led to the government response to the AI Opportunities Action Plan. I believe there's another report coming soon as well. So really, my first plea would be, I think we've had enough plans. The other problem that we have, I think, is we've also had a timeline that's been far too long. It's interesting, I was in Japan 3 weeks ago at a post-exascale meeting, and I talked to people, and everybody in many countries have had long periods to bring systems together. The last Japanese system took in total about 14 years. But a lot of that 14 years in Japan was designing a chip and building a system and then building the computer. We seem to spend far too long trying just to get to the point where somebody will spend some money. And if we could reduce that, we could really speed up the value and the importance of supercomputing in the UK. And exascale's with us now. I have to say the Japanese didn't get to the exascale, but they had a valiant attempt, and I think everybody would agree that Fugaku really was the precursor to the exascale age. China is not playing the international game at the moment and haven't publicly admitted to their exascale systems, but they do have them. They submit papers on them. They're spectacularly large, complex systems built with Chinese technology. The Sunway system is 41 million cores. Right? You have four cores in your laptop. The world's first exascale supercomputer publicly was the Frontier system at Oak Ridge in 2022, which is an enormous achievement. I don't think people really understood how difficult it was. Aurora followed with El Capitan most recently. Interestingly, all of this program, the chip that you should be passing around at the moment, that was funded in a program called Fast Forward about 12 years before Frontier came into being. And that was the American government giving money to Intel, AMD, and NVIDIA. And why would they do that? Those are big, rich companies, you might say. But the American government realizes that science can push the boundaries of computing forward, but it's also lucky that it's got companies that can commercialize and make lots of money for the American economy and at tax receipts for the government. So yes, they probably spent $2 or $3 billion on that program, but NVIDIA is a $3 trillion company now. And I think sometimes in the UK, we don't really understand that. You can see where we are in Europe, or the European Union. Pre-exascale systems in Finland, Italy, and Spain. The Jupiter system in Germany will almost certainly be announced in June as having reached the exascale, and the Alice Rikoch system next year in France. They've also already funded in the last 2 years 13 AI factories. And in total, if you read the bottom there, they've now spent, or will have spent by 2027, 10 billion euros. Finland's new project, which they've just received 612 million euros for, is just kicking off. And UK GDP is 11 times that of Finland, right? We are not remotely playing the right game at the moment. We're just being left behind as a country. I'm trying not to sound whinging as best I can. So we are making a little bit of progress. What next for national supercomputing? So we've now got the Archer 2 extension continued until November 26. Until earlier this week, Archer 2 is going to end in November 25. We don't have any news on the exascale project, but obviously we're sitting with bated breath for the spending review. But I've stopped calling it exascale now. We're not going to have an exascale system. We're going to have the next national supercomputer serviced, because we're in the post-exascale age. The exascale's been done. The next American systems in 28 and 29 will be 10, 15 exaflops. And we just need to accept that. And, you know, as Kate said, technology is moving at incredible pace at the moment. The new GPUs that we're now getting private briefings on are incredibly complex devices, much more powerful than the ones that were even used to build Frontier 3 years ago. We now think we'll be able to get an exaflop with between 8,000 and 12,000 GPUs. And this is really interesting, right? Because it's both a much smaller system, but it gives us considerable challenges. The exascale design that we were going to go with in 2024 had 6,000 server nodes and 24,000 GPUs. So if we go with 8,000 GPU designs, that sounds great, it should be cheaper. But remember, we've got 6,000 users today that use Archer 2. We could have 10,000 on the exascale system over its lifetime. If you have fewer server nodes, you have more queues. You do less science. You may do it more quickly, but it's still going to be very overloaded. At the same time, the 8,000 servers will not have as much memory as Archer 2 does today. And you have to think about supercomputing on two axes. You've got the axis of speed to do compute, but also that of memory. So in truth, if we go for an exaflop, I'm going to be very, very happy, but I'll be sad because we won't be able to do such large problems as we can do today. But we will be able to do problems that need a lot of compute much more quickly. Problems that may be, as Mark said, intractable today without the compute. So all of this suggests to me that we should set our target at least two exaflops, but, you know, we shall see.
Yes, we have suggested that.
Indeed. So, you know, the purpose of this meeting, this event, was to talk about exascale AI, quantum computing, and net zero. And I wanted to make a few points which, in fact, I think complement what Kate and Mark have said. So I view AI as an application of supercomputing. You know, for many, many years, actually, AI used quite modest amounts of compute. With these large language models and the generative AI, the way you train these models needs a vast amount of compute. And it may be that we're doing all this wrong. Or it may be that we are mimicking the human brain the way it learns from age one, age two, etc. We just don't know. But, you know, as we were discussing earlier on, the human brain uses about 25 watts. An exascale computer today uses 18 megawatts. Right? So there's something fundamental we don't know about how all of this works. But AI itself, I view as an application of supercomputing, an application of computing. And I don't think playing exascale or numerical supercomputing off against AI makes sense at all. It's the same thing. AI is an application of supercomputing. So I'm agreeing here very much to what Kate said about quantum computing. We do a lot of quantum computing in Edinburgh, particularly through our work with the National Quantum Computing Centre and the quantum software lab that Ellen Kashefi leads here. In order to get to the point where quantum can be delivered commercially, we have to explore how we program these devices, what sort of algorithms they can solve, and what languages we need to program them. And that means that we've got to pretend we've already built the next generation of quantum computers and simulate them on supercomputers. And that's happening today. There's a huge amount of quantum simulation going on. And supercomputing is without doubt going to be critical to delivering the commercial application of quantum computing over the next 5 to 10 years. And then the other point was net zero, and I'm going to upset Gavin now by telling him that Archer 2 is operationally net zero already, and Peter's favourite story is that we do have plans to make exascale better than net zero by reusing all the heat, by heating the mine water under the data centre. The heat will flow towards built-up areas in Edinburgh, and people can take the heat back out with heat pumps. And we've just drilled our first hole, and I have to say, I'm never drilling another hole. We wanted to do three, we ended up with one, but we did get to where we wanted to be. And maybe we should take some advice off a geologist. I'll speed up a little bit. So I want to give one example of a project, and this is the project I've led along with Lee Lapworth at Rolls-Royce. It was a prosperity partnership from EPSSC, a great model of industry academic collaboration. It allows you to work down at TRL 1 to 3, but solving problems that are of real value to companies. And what we focused on was the world's first very high fidelity simulation of a gas turbine engine in operation. We're doing the structure, the thermodynamics, the fluid dynamics, and the actual electromagnetics associated with that. And we wanted to move to a trillion degrees of freedom. We do regularly 10 to 100 million degrees of freedom today. We want to get much higher than that. And so the only way to run models of this nature will be on an exascale computer. And, you know, in the classic style, it's a great collaboration between multiple universities, some SMEs, and Rolls-Royce. And just to give you an idea of why Rolls-Royce want this and why it's important and difficult, the aerospace engine industry wants to move to the point where engines can be virtually certified, so you can model it and get a certification. And this is what happened in the automotive industry 10, 15 years ago. But it took 10 years for the aviation industry to get approval from the Federal Aviation Authority to model bird strikes of engines and not have to do that physical test. In the 2025 to 2030 time frame, Rolls-Royce want to get to the point where they can do whole engine virtual certification. And that means we need to do extremely high resolution multiphysics models, as I said, and move from 100 million cells to trillions. And this picture on the right here actually is right at the leading edge of what is possible today. This is the next generation of jet engine from, commercial jet engine from Rolls-Royce. It's called the UltraFan. And what this model's showing is, if you've ever been in a plane, Heathrow runway, very, very wet, you'll see as you accelerate on full thrust, it can hoover up a stream of water from the runway into the engine. And it's an extremely difficult engineering problem and modeling problem. And the work we did in Asimov is being already used in production use to model this. This is using Asimov work for the main fan and the airflow into the first compressor. But we're not modeling the compressor, we're not modeling the second compressor or the turbines, etc. Right? And we want to do all of it in the end. It's the sort of modeling that we should be doing in a commonplace way, because by doing this we'll push the whole area of aviation, hopefully in the future net zero aviation, forward. So three final points. What should we be doing? We should be bold. Right? We're post-exascale. The UK should aim, I think, for at least 2 exaflops, without a doubt. Our American friends are going to go, I think, for 10 exaflops in the next few years. We should plan. So we should be planning now for 2035. Right? It's easy to make an irrefutable case for doing this. We're just really bad as a community about gathering the evidence in order to make the case to Treasury. And given the time it's taken us to get to exascale, or hopefully exascale, we need to start immediately on the next system, because that next system needs to be bought in 2030, right? And I sometimes think we don't, we suffer enormously from the parliamentary term being 5 years. And then finally, I want us to compete again. I want us to push the boundaries of modeling, of AI, of quantum simulation. I want us to do missions again, or grand challenges, as they called them at the start of my career, so that we can properly compete on the world stage, because we have some of the best computational scientists in the UK. And frankly, over the last decade, they've been let down by the research councils and the various governments. Thank you very much.
Why don't you sit there, Mark?